This episode of Guitar Radio Show is brought to you by Nico's USA Pickups. The quintessential pickup is finally here to capture the essence of the best vintage and modern tones on the planet. We all know there are certain periods that have captivated guitar players because of their cherished tones. Nico's USA Pickups are handmade and designed to deliver just what you're looking for. Made in America, incorporating period-specific materials for the most discerning guitarist, the tone will easily captivate your ears with an amazing balance of highs, mids, and bass response, yielding unprecedented sound and feel. Authentic tones from authentic materials, handcrafted in the USA, Nico's USA Pickups. Go to nicosusapickups.com for more information. With a unique design and construction, DNA Guitars is a clear choice when looking for the all-around guitar. DNA Guitars' recipe for creating perfect instruments is steeped in tradition while looking toward the future. DNA's recessed bridge construction is a five-point contact bridge, a solid brass bridge that is inset into the body, maximizing strength, contact, and string vibration. An incredibly comfortable guitar to play, DNA Guitars molds to your body, and the neck profiles are wonderful to play across. DNA uses an exclusive 100% solderless wiring harness that is designed for guitars with single coil or humbucker setup. Looking for versatility? Look no more. Check out DNA Guitars. Go to dnaguitarcompany.com. Custom guitars handcrafted in the USA. DNA Guitars. Innovation to fuel your inspiration. Well, hello, everybody. Welcome to episode 104 of Guitar Radio Show, the show dedicated to all things guitar, dedicated to the guitar player, guitar builder, gear maker, and purveyors of such items that you may not know about, but you should. Really. My name's Mark Davin. I'm your host. And today, we have got, you know, and this is one of the cool things about doing this show. Every once in a while, I get to interview a hero of mine, somebody that I thought was just so damn cool, still do, and so badass, and still is, and it's so damn cool that I get to talk to this guy. We've got Pat Travers on the show today. Yeah, I'm psyched. It's so cool. I mean, you know, we always talk about his guitar playing and everything else, right, which is totally amazing and badass. You know, but his vocals were so cool too. He had this way of putting over a song, and those, the way he just does it, you know, this swagger that was always so damn cool. So I'm really psyched to talk to him. Hey folks, don't forget guitarradioshow.com. If you are hearing the show on iTunes and Stitcher Radio and all the other places that the show lands on, that's super cool. But hey, come on over to guitarradioshow.com because we've got chocolate. No, I'm kidding. We've got more information about that particular episode that you might want to know about. Show notes, links to the artist, and a lot of times, matter of fact, almost every time, videos that correlate with this particular episode in one way or another. So I highly recommend guitarradioshow.com. Why wouldn't I? Check out our Facebook page, Twitter, Instagram, Tumblr, Vine, and we'll follow you back. All right? Are you ready? Here we go. We're getting ready to check out my interview with Mr. Pat Travers. Ready? Guitar Radio Show. GuitarRadioShow.com.
Cocaine. Been starting right, folks, our next guest has over 70 releases, and he's still here to kick your ass. Pat Travers, welcome to Guitar Radio Show.
Hi, Mark. How are you? Hey. Thanks very much for having me on your show.
Thanks for being here. Greatly appreciate it. I'm a huge fan of you. You have no idea. This is a
thank you very much.
This is a big deal for me. And your latest record, Retro Rocket, which came out this past March, is amazing.
Thank you. It's a pretty kind of a raw approach. I didn't get too hung up on plus the whole nature of the recording was a little unusual because this guy, one of the guys I deal with at Cleopatra Records, got in touch with me and said, hey, would you be able to put some guitar and vocals over these backing tracks in a kind of an early 70s style? And I wasn't really sure exactly what that meant, but I said, well, send me some of these, because they were pre-recorded. They were recorded with a drummer and a bass player and I guess a guitar player and a keyboard too. Mm-hmm. There wasn't much guitar on them, but they were like these jams kind of, and you know, so I would have to first of all get some guitar on there, and then number two, try to figure out what to sing lyrically and melodically over these backing tracks, bearing in mind that they were done. I can't change a bass note or change a hit on the drums. They're already there, so I have to work with what I got, you know. Mm-hmm. And so I just wailed away with I borrowed from a friend of mine a VLS 57 gold top, and the guitar was just wonderful, and I had no effects on it. Basically, I just ran it right into the amp, and I had a little delay on, but I always do anyway.
So, right.
And just kind of flailed away along with the track, so it's got a very spontaneous feel and sound to it because it really was, you know.
Well, I think that's what I sense mostly in there is when I listen to it, my pulse rate goes up because it's like,
Oh, well, good.
Yeah.
There's some great energy on some of those jams. Yeah, it's good stuff. Just, yeah. Musical abandon there.
That's what it's all about, ain't it, though?
Mm-hmm.
So, what, you know, you grew up in Toronto.
For a little bit, yeah. I was born there, and I guess I lived there till I was 6 years old, and then we moved to a little town in northern Ontario and stayed there for about 4 years and moved to a further north Ontario town for a little while and then ended up in Ottawa. Mm-hmm. When I was about 12, and that's when I got my first acoustic guitar, started, you know, seriously trying to learn how to play guitar.
Was there a particular guitar player that you said, wow, I want to do that?
Well, in the beginning, no, not really. All bands had guitars, you know, and seeing the Beatles when I was 9 on the Ed Sullivan Show was a big inspiration.
Mm-hmm.
So, actually, the whole kind of lead guitar thing didn't really come along until, you know, like 67, 60, the end of 66, 67 with mm-hmm. Cream and Hendrix. And, you know, that's when that whole guitar thing, I mean, Pete Townsend did a little stuff, sort of, but he was never really a bluesy solo guy or even, you know, it was mostly rhythmic, so
mm-hmm.
I had been playing guitar a little bit, you know, at least learning the fundamentals, and didn't really know. I liked all kinds of music, you know, and but I did, when I did hear, like, Purple Haze or Foxy Lady, whichever one it was. I think it might have been Foxy Lady on the radio for the first time when I was, I guess, 13, and it just blew me away. So that sort of changed everything. The guitar became a much, much bigger instrument, you know? I mean, you could do stuff with it that didn't necessarily have anything to do with still playing. You know, you could make it feedback and use the whammy bar and shake it and modify it. And so there was a whole lot of stuff, and you could, you know, do rhythmic scratching on the strings with your right hand. And so all of a sudden the guitar was doing a lot more stuff, you know, which mm-hmm. meant that you could have three-piece bands and things like that, you know. So, of course, we had Johnny Winter, and we had Jimi Hendrix and Jeff Beck and Jimmy Page and mm-hmm. Carlos Santana. And geez, just so many guys all at the same time, you know. It was really, really cool. And mm-hmm. they all, of course, sounded very different from one another, but they all sort of had the same kind of bluesy roots along with pop music, you know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, for sure.
As well. I mean, because when you start playing, especially back then, and even when I got started, you had to play pop tunes in a bar, and you didn't just start playing your own material. You know, you went through probably years of being the human jukebox, but that gave you a vocabulary as well, you know?
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. For sure. When I first heard you, I grew up on Long Island in New York.
Yeah, we were just there. We were on the South Shore there.
Oh, cool.
On Saturday.
Oh, wow. Bummer. I'm not there anymore. I'm in Austin, Texas now. But,
Okay.
But when growing up and I heard you for the first time, I was what I was immediately taken back by and blown away by was the sound, the wall of sound that you had. There was a sense of urgency to the music. Because it was funny too. Because for us growing up, the title of the album, "Go for What You Know," that was the record I heard first.
Yeah, the live album.
Yeah, and it's funny because that became a saying for us.
Yeah.
As time
well, it's interesting because I got that phrase from Steve Perry of Journey.
Really.
We did a tour together in Europe, and Steve would say, all right, babe, go for what you know, babe. it was a little catchphrase that him and I used, so I thought it was good for an album.
Yeah, it's a great name for an album, and it became became like a battle cry for us.
Yeah.
You know, so that wall of sound that you had, that urgency, that intensity, that's the word, intensity.
Especially at the time of that album with Pat Thrall and Mars Cowling and Tommy Aldridge, you had a lot of very aggressive players, or at least players with a lot of aplomb.
Yeah.
And, and chops to go along with it.
Hell yeah.
So it was, it had all the rock and roll energy, but, you know, there was some little bit of sophistication in some of the phrases and things here and there. But we always tried to make them sound like easy, you know. Whenever I came up with parts like that, I didn't want to do them just to be clever and make people lose the beat and the thing, even though it was dropping a beat out.
Right.
It made it sound like it just kept going through there.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Getting Better is a perfect example. It drops a beat out, every 3 bars, 4 bars.
Right. Garage bands can't do that.
Yeah, but, you know, I remember when I came up with it, and I had Nico McBrain playing drums, and he did a beautiful thing, because I said, you know, I know we got this beat dropping out, and one starting again on after 3 instead of after 4. I said, but can you make it sound like it's not happening at all? You know, just kind of play right through it. And, he did. He came up with a great thing, and every drummer that's ever worked with me since loves playing that little part. You know?
Yeah, yeah, for sure.
So, yeah. I asked him for it, and he created it.
So as the years went on, you were always kind of a blues bass kind of guy anyway, I think. You later on got involved with Mr. Varney, who I like to call the man with the golden ears.
Well, I don't know about that, but he's had a lot of guys come through there. school, it was 1992 or close to that, and I'd sort of, I was at a different point in my life at that point. I'd just gotten married and was kind of being much more of a, trying to be a serious guy. And I hadn't made a record in a while, and Mike asked me if I could do an album of covers, which appealed to me because I wasn't, even though I was feeling good and I was playing great, I didn't really feel like writing any songs at that point. So mm-hmm. I thought, okay, cool. I mm-hmm. can do this. All I have to do is come up with new arrangements, and that's pretty easy. So we did that Blues Tracks album in 92. And I did end up writing one or two songs for that in the end. But, and then did a series of them, although how bluesy a lot of them were is, you know, disputable, really.
Well, they were heavy, but they were blue. They were heavy blues.
You know, they had some bluesy songs on them, but then there were, especially the ones I wrote, weren't necessarily your standard 12-bar type.
No, blues, you know? No. But you know, that's neither here nor there either, because it's like there's a wide variety. I mean, you could drive a truck through the term the blues. You know?
Oh, absolutely. No, you're sure right about that. I mean, as I get older, I think the blues really is, it's you know, a reflection of the totality of your life, your experiences, mm-hmm. happy and sad. And so it's a delivery more than anything, you know. Mm-hmm. I think it's the way you present the music. Because, yeah, I mean, I hear bluesiness in all kinds of things, you know, sometimes. And you can tell that the person, like I said, who's delivering that lyric has some emotional experience.
For sure. I want to ask you about a couple of tracks on the record that really just have captivated me. There's a 5 minute 20 second joint that just blows my mind. It's called Up Is Down. Tell me about that track.
Yeah.
That I love this track. Play it over and over again.
Yeah, I wrote. Once again, you know, I put some guitar on there, and as with these tracks, I just, you know, were sent to me by email.
Mm-hmm.
So I still don't know the people that played on those tracks. That played the drums and the bass and a little bit of guitar, and there's a keyboard on that too as well. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, I established the guitar part after blasting through it two or three times, and then I kind of was able to figure out from that where the vocal should go. And then, you know, I had to say, well, what's this song about, you know? So I was just a lament of modern times, really, you know?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it seems like, you know, seems like, you know, I don't know about you, but sometimes, you know, I have to get out of these hotel rooms and I'm packing my stuff and it seems like I can't do it because one foot's nailed to the floor, you know.
Mm-hmm.
You're super busy trying to do something and accomplishing nothing or whatever, you know. So I was thinking of stuff like that and just, you know, the uphill climb that is our lot in life for most of us anyway.
Mm-hmm. And and you use just the Les Paul on there?
Yeah, a VOS Custom Shop 57 Gold Top.
And beautiful
guitar.
What kind of amp?
Let me see. What did I use on that? I probably used a Blackstar.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And, you know,
used the Blackstar. I have a little Marshall single 12 combo in there,
yeah.
And I sometimes use that too, so I'm not sure which one I used.
You know, the funny thing is too, because when I heard the track, I was like, this is completely and absolutely totally Pat. This is him.
Isn't that funny? I mean I didn't have that, you know. I ended up doing six of those backing track songs.
Mm-hmm.
There were more of them. They sent me actually 10 or 12, but I couldn't find anything for the other ones that I thought was any good on my part, you know?
Right.
So, put the vocal and guitar on it. And so it ended up all sounding good. I think, you know, that's I had the running order completely different on that CD, and then when it showed up, it was not the way I had requested, but I didn't know. They put all six of those tunes in a row, and the last four tunes are different players, and all done in here in Central Florida where I live.
Right. Well, you know what's interesting too is, you know, you said that you used a Les Paul VOS and you used a Black Star amp, and there were no Black Star amps back in the day, but it still sounded.
Well, no, but they had Marshall basic old 100-watt Marshalls, and that's all the Black Star I have. That's all. It's an Artisan. It doesn't have any master volume or input volume. It's exactly with a couple of modifications they put into it, and it's got really good tone. It's like one of those old 100-watt Marshalls, but done really well, you know. Mm-hmm. And so it's got a lot more tone, but it does basically the same thing. It's a very powerful amplifier, and I don't have to run it very loud at all.
Right, but what I'm saying is it sounded like you. It was you.
Yeah, well.
And that goes back to that whole...
You know, I can pretty much pick up any guitar and it's going to sound like me, you know. I don't know why that is. Well, I do. It's just in the fingers and the execution and the way I do things. So everything I play is going to sound like me.
All right. Well, I said Billy Gibbons says it's meat on metal on wood.
Yeah, absolutely. It is. Mm-hmm. But then, I mean, that's the coarse definition, but then the finer, more nuanced one is a little harder to explain because it can come down to just a deviation of your pick of the corner of your pick on a string to get a totally different harmonic or a, you know, and you can't really explain those things. You gotta seek them out yourself, you know, just hit every position you could possibly find on that string between the bridge and the neck, you know.
Mm-hmm.
There's a just almost an infinite amount of slightly different tones there.
Yeah. So, yeah, and for me with this record, I think the thing that I like the most about it is that you really are just letting go. You are just playing all over this record.
Yeah. Well, it was fun, and I'd like to do something like that again. You know, I agree with you. I think it has like we used to say when we made records, vinyl, that the sound jumps out of the grooves, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So it does do that, and sometimes that's what people are trying to achieve in a recording, and it can be elusive, you know. You have to kind of be careful with that, because even then, after you're mixing something like that, after you've done all the recording, then the tendency is to smooth off all the rough edges, you know, so you got to fight that urge, too.
Yeah.
When you're mixing and just leave it raw.
For sure.
Because everybody always says when you're doing recording albums, they go, oh, you know, especially wives and roadies and stuff, they go, oh, I like the rough mixes better, you know, because the rough mixes didn't have any of the effects on there or any of the rough edges buffed off yet.
Right.
Much more urgent sounding.
Yeah.
Much more urgent sound coming out of the speakers.
So when you got these tracks... Or when you hear a track, or when you're writing something, do you, you know, when you first start getting that germ of the idea, does it become a fully realized vision right there, or is it something that you kind of have to wrestle with a little bit?
No, it depends. Sometimes things come pretty quick, and I know pretty much. Things, they start stacking up in my mind, and I know where I want to put things.
Mm-hmm.
But no, sometimes it's a building thing. You know, you put on this track and then try to do something different on another track, and then, you know, like I'll start going for the vocals, knowing they're not going to be the final vocals, but trying to figure out what not to sing. You know,
mm-hmm.
So I don't accidentally do that on the. On the final mix, so yeah, I like to come back a day or next day to finish the vocal or do whatever,
mm-hmm.
or maybe change your guitar part or change something.
Yeah. Well, here's a question that I never ask, but I thought it was interesting because someone had told me this. What do you think about when, I mean, what goes through your head when you hear that somebody like Kirk Hammett from Metallica cites you as like you're the number one guy?
Well, I remember listening to guys like Tommy Bolin, and you know, I was a super big Tommy Bolin fan.
Me too.
And there's I'm trying to think of some other guys that were really good and you know, didn't kind of really get to stadium stature, but there sure were a lot of them, you know, a lot of players.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, the thing is, I've sort of been doing my own thing now for quite some time, so I don't really listen to a lot of other guitar players, and if I do, I don't really try to play what they're playing. I might try to grab the essence of what they're playing, but mm-hmm. not the mm-hmm. note-for-note deal. That doesn't seem, you know, just because one guy recorded it, it's easy for another guy.
Right.
So, well, just copying stuff is... It's good to do the copy first, but then play your own
way. Right. Well, the very idea that you would even think about that now is just, you know, you are who you are. I mean, to me, you're iconic, so.
Yeah. Well, I feel good about my playing now, and we've been playing three-piece for the last month or so.
Oh, really?
Yeah. We're going to do this power trio thing next year.
Oh, that's cool.
I'm putting a set together with as a tribute to all the great power trios, obviously Hendrix, Green, maybe James Gang, Robin Trower, even Rush. There's two or three songs I like by Rush. You know, I was going to put those together in a medley and just have like this 20-minute blast. And we'd have... 12 songs in there, and they would all be hits, you know?
That would be amazing. Will there be any Texas dates?
Well, you know, our problem is finding time to rehearse, and so, because we all live all over the place, so
yeah.
That's something we're still putting together now. However, the band's material as we play it now is wonderful. This was some idea I had, and hopefully it's going to work out, you know, but have yet to have had a proper rehearsal on any of that.
Yeah, well, that's a cool idea.
That's the problem. It's, you know, it's difficult to get everybody together for a day or two, you know?
Yeah. Hey, would you walk us through your live rig, starting with the guitar?
Would I what?
Would you walk us through your live rig? What are you using?
Oh, library code. I use a PRS custom 22 single cut from 04. And then I run that through a little Black Star preamp. That's where I get all my overdrive from.
Right.
And then into a little Line 6 M9 pedal board replacer. It's just a little thing. It's only got 6 presets on it. But that thing sounds wonderful. And then I come out of that into the clean channel of whatever amp. It's either, you know, hopefully my Black Star, but if not, a Marshall 2000, if they're in good shape, can be pretty clean.
Mm-hmm.
There's quite a few. I used a Mesa Boogie the other night that sounded good.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, I'm not using any distortion on the actual amp. I've got it just totally clean and punchy.
Okay.
And get all my overdrives from the tube preamp.
Oh, cool.
And that way the effects are going through a clean amp instead of a distorted one, because I don't like the distortion on the effects should come from the distortion box, not from the amplifier.
So you get a lot more definition that way.
Yeah, it doesn't pile up on itself and get mushy. It sounds more defined.
Right.
Yeah.
So, do you think we'll see another record in 2016?
It's possible. I've been thinking about all kinds of things. It's just how exactly to achieve them, and bearing in mind that we live in different times, and the CD is not as important as it used to be. As a matter of fact, trying to come up with 12 songs takes up a whole lot of time, and recording them does too.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, and then you spend a lot. You got a lot invested emotionally and financially in that damn thing, and you don't even know if it's going to do anything when it comes out. And since people don't buy CDs, you might as well assume it's not going to do very well at all.
Yeah.
You know, so I think that we need to just, and I would love this, being able to just work on one or two songs at a time and really get them great, and then make a video to go on YouTube and have the songs registered in iTunes. And once a month, you know, just pop out a YouTube video with a new
mm-hmm.
song.
Mm-hmm.
So one of them goes viral.
Yeah, that's, you know, I think more and more people are thinking that way as well. I think it's smart. I mean,
yeah.
it's the DIY.
Yeah, but you gotta have something for people to see. People are not just listening anymore, you
no.
know. I mean, they might be later, but initially they got to be titulated visually.
Yeah, you got to suck them in.
Yeah. Yeah, we got to suck them in there, Mark.
Well, Pat, I got to tell you.
In life.
I got to tell you, man, it is, I, you know, if somebody would have told me a year ago that I was going to get to talk to you, I wouldn't have believed them. So this is,
oh, wow.
This has been, this has been a thrill for me.
I appreciate the fact that you like my stuff, and it's been fun being on your show, and we'll see you there in Austin sometime soon.
Yeah, I'll be there with bells on.
Okay, brother.
Thank you, Pat. Have a great night.
Thank you.
See you.
Good night. Bye-bye.
Well, how freaking cool was that? Damn, that was so much fun. that's great. I love talking to people like that. That's a trip. I mean, that's that sound and the great vocals and those killer songs. Great stuff. I hope you enjoyed it. All right, we got... as an addition to this episode, we've got a little bit of a check-in with Jose Mulatto from Nico's USA Pickups to discuss the Southern Heritage Pickups and to also talk about what they've got going on in 2016. Check it out. Jose Mulatto from Nico's USA Pickups, welcome back to Guitar Radio Show.
How you doing?
All right, man. Nice to have you back. Deja vu.
Yeah, it's great to be back.
So we're going to talk a little bit about today about the Southern Heritage Pickups. It's one of your latest models.
Correct.
And I have them in my 2005 Les Paul Standard. And as I've mentioned in the video review, if you go to the Guitar Radio Show YouTube channel, you'll be able to see the review of that there and be able to hear the pickups, I should say, the whole set. And I got to tell you, man, it brought a whole new voice to that Les Paul. It's amazing. And I set the pickups, when I set them in, in the middle position as out of phase. And man, I love that vibe.
Yeah. You know, there's something different going on those pickups. We did use a special wire and it brought out, a very unique tone that is very different than production pickups.
Yeah. It is very different. You know, one of the things that I noticed that when I'm hitting, you know, I had burst buckers in there before, and those are fine pickups, but when I'm hitting chords, especially open chords, you can really distinctly hear every single string, every single note that's being held down, and it's great.
Yeah, you know, we have a similar experience. I took out Burst Bucker Pros out of my 81 custom shop and was a little hesitant in doing that. Of course, I took out the original PAFs that were in there. And A-B-ing them against those, I was surprised. The Burst Buckers are supposed to be a full and hotter pickup, mm-hmm. especially the Pros. And while these aren't as hot in output, they were fuller. There was something definitely a warmer, more dynamic vibe going on.
Yeah, for sure. And what's the approach there? I mean, is that happenstance or was that by design?
You know, I think that's just something that is, I was talking to a customer and he was talking about another manufacturer who we won't mention. But what ends up happening, we realize, is that every pickup manufacturer, their pickup has a certain colorization, if you will, a certain vibe, and you either like that vibe or you don't. Mm-hmm. You know, if you look at some of the bigger manufacturers, they definitely have a certain vibe, and whether they make a humbucker or a strap pickup, it still has that same colorization or characteristic that you would recognize. Maybe somebody, you know, a cousin of a family, or, you know, a brother or sister, you kind of recognize that they belong to a certain family. Well, it's the same way in pickups, because winders use a certain tension, mm-hmm. a certain winding pattern, and that just kind of blends into everything they do. Mm-hmm. And so, like our strap pickups, you tend to get that more dynamic, bigger, fuller tone that is lacking in other more production pickups that seem to dominate today's market.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, and you are, I mean, your history so far has been predominantly single coil, but your humbuckers are definitely to be reckoned with. I mean, they're a whole nother level of humbucker.
Yeah, it's interesting that you say that, because looking back over 2015, we had an amazing year. We picked up a lot of endorsees, some fantastic guitar players that we just absolutely are honored to work with. And we know that the list is going to continue to grow in 2016. But we started the year very strong in single coil sales, not only Strat pickups, but Tele pickups. Mm-hmm. But the last 3 months has been dominated by humbucker sales.
That's cool.
Yeah, it's been something that even in fact, as we speak here, you know, we're trying to figure out making sure that we can keep up with demand going into 2016, especially on the humbucker side, because it takes to, there's a little bit more intricacies in manufacturing involved in making a humbucker. Mm-hmm. And we realized that actually it's a differentiating point between us and a lot of other boutique manufacturers, because we realized that some winders, excuse me, don't have the knowledge to make a humbucker. Mm-hmm. And I say that in humility, because I had to ask somebody to teach me. I took a few stabs at it, and as a company, and we actually had to ask a few people. Not only did we look at some other designs, but we had to ask people about the science, because I went to school to be a civil engineer, not an electrical engineer. So I had to go to school, and it was quite humbling, but we're very proud of where we came from and what we're able to do now and the quality of the humbucker. So, you know, we say that respecting those that have gone before us.
Mm-hmm, for sure. Well, yeah, that's one thing. I think there's a lot of reverence in your company and what you do. You're very true to form. I mean, just with the idea of using authentic, period specific, you know, ingredients to what you're making, and that speaks to me in huge volumes, because, you know, like the Mojo pickups that I have in my Blue Strat is just it's everybody who hears it, that guitar is really, people are really get turned on to that guitar when they hear it. They go, wow. They just can't believe how woody it sounds. You know? So it was. I'm so glad I was able to put it in that guitar, because it was a perfect marriage.
Yeah, you know, and that guitar that you did put it in looks like a fun guitar to play.
It is. It's a blast. I love that guitar. So speaking of 2016, what could we look forward to? Can you give us a little sneak peek?
You know, one of the things that we've tried to focus on as a company is making sure that we don't step on toes, making sure that we don't copy any more than anybody else has, or, you know, can prevent themselves from doing.
Yeah.
So we've kind of taken an approach, and in surveying what's going on, we realize that there's only a handful of manufacturers that actually actively pursue to give back to the artists that give us a reason to be in business in the first place.
Mm-hmm.
So one of the things that we've talked to a handful of our artists about is coming up with a release, an LP or a CD release for our customers to experience our artists. And to the best of our knowledge, no other pickup manufacturer has done this. So we're kind of excited about that, really highlighting our artists who use our pickups. And so that customers who buy something from Nico's, or even just send in something, can get a free CD if they request, you know, and send in a self-addressed stamp envelope. We'll send them a free CD. We're going to do a limited run. And we hope that this is something that can take off. And, you know, every year that there's a new release that our customers can not only look forward to, but that also our artists can look forward to having their name put out in a customer's face who may not otherwise have experienced their music.
That's great. Well, that's sort of like what I try to do here. I mean, trying to turn people on to guitar players that they might not have heard of before.
Exactly.
But that's a great idea. I love that. I think that's fantastic. And, you know, send a couple my way and I'll give them away over here too.
Absolutely. Cool. For sure to do that.
And so are we being hush-hush about models, about pickup models, or...?
No, future models, you know, we've been doing some experimenting, doing some homework as well. So we have mentioned before, either in passing or on previous shows, aspirations for other humbucker models. So we will be releasing a Heritage Pro set as well as a Blues Heritage set.
Mm.
So those will be coming out in 2016. In addition to that, we hope to come out with a custom set for our buddy who is a neighbor of yours. He plays incredible set of P90s. So we're hoping to, in conjunction with WoFat's 2016 album, work with helping him with a custom set, and even something that his fans may even partake in a giveaway through. So mm-hmm. You know, we're just looking for that. And then in the Strat realm, there's been some homework done, and we hope to release a Blackie set, something that gives tribute to Clapton's 1974 Stratocaster. So,
wow.
So
that's a cool idea.
Yeah. So, you know, there are some varying reports on, of course, just like SRV's number one, what the output is, but mm-hmm. We're going to do our best to bring that home. So
that's great. Oh, that's exciting. I like that idea a lot. I'm thinking, okay, what Strat can I put those in?
Need another Strat, dear.
Oh no. Uh-oh.
So,
well, that's really cool, man. And I want to thank you for everything that you've done with us. We've been having a blast with you guys, and it's been great to do the giveaways. And we actually just gave away a set of the Southern Heritage humbuckers, and mm-hmm. We're actually still waiting to hear back from that person that we sent the info to. So,
oh, okay. Well, yeah. That might just be somebody else's gain there.
It might be. Like I said, he's got till January 15th, and this is airing on the first week of January, this particular interview. So, yeah, you got till the 15th, pal. You know who you are. Otherwise, I go back into the hat and pull another number, pull another name.
Right.
So. Well, Jose, I can't thank you enough for coming on again, and I love what you do. You are an artisan in the true sense, and it's great to play your pickups. I love my mojos, and they're just fantastic.
That's great. You know, anything that we do is just appreciation to those that have given to us. So.
Yeah, well, thank you very much. And folks, you can go to NicosUSApickups.com for more info, and you can do your shopping there as well. It's great, great stuff. Jose, thanks again.
Hey, thank you, and best of 2016 to everybody.
Absolutely.
Especially Guitar Radio Show.
Thank you very much.
Absolutely.
Hold on 1 second. We're going to sign off right here.
Okay.
Okay. All right, well, we got to get out of here, but hey, take care of yourselves. Take care of each other. Keep on playing, and we'll see you on the next episode of Guitar Radio Show. Peace.
I like this crowd already.
GRS Productions.